You're listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. For I Will Be With You. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible.
Welcome back to the For I Will Be With You podcast. I'm Baruch. I'm an alcoholic, and I'll be your host for this 18th week of the year from April 29th to May 5th, covering Exodus 23 to Exodus 24:7. So in this section of the Torah, of the first five books of the Bible, we have the a statement of the Ten Commandments and many of the other specific laws that follow them as a legal code that the Israelites are to follow in their lives as free people now that they've been freed from slavery in Egypt. And in Exodus 23 gives one of the Ten Commandments that says, "You shall not recognize the gods of others." So this is an exhortation not to worship idols. And this is a pretty basic concept for monotheist. You may not worship idols. You may not worship the gods of others. And you might think also, well, you know, that's not so hard. I don't worship idols, and I don't want to worship idols. I don't bow down to statues of other gods, so I'm off the hook, right? Well, yes, you are. But a couple of thoughts. One is that idolatry comes in many different forms. And it's not just the, you know, stone statue of a pantheistic deity that you're supposed to stay away from. And one thing that's interesting to note is that the Israelites, at this point in history, had a very serious craving for idol worship. This is something that God removed from the Israelites. But if you had been alive at that time, you would have had a strong urge to bow down before idols. In fact, it would have maybe felt like some of the cravings we felt for alcohol and drugs and other addictions. And then we have today other forms of idol worship. What do we worship that isn't God? We might worship money, status, fame, other people, you know, other pursuits that are not godly. We're not rooted in the Bible. We may devote our lives to them. We may, in fact, be bowing down to them. And it's always a balancing act because, you know, it's okay to have a nice place to live and a car to drive and so forth. But if you start to organize your life around the service of these objects or these ideals, these secular idols, you may do yourself spiritual harm. And in fact, I think if we look at our own stories in addiction, you know, we see that we and others in the rooms often tried to fill up our empty lives with possessions and meaningless achievements. And then the lack of fulfillment inherent in this kind of activity can create a void that you want to fill with toxic behaviors and literally chemical toxins. And I know from my own experience, having previously had a pretty big corporate sort of career, I can remember very clearly early on, it was years before I got sober, but it was an early sort of warning shot that something wasn't right in my life, that I worked very hard to achieve a certain milestone of success in my career, and then one day the phone rang and I was notified that this thing that I'd wanted to achieve had been achieved. And it was supposed to be, at least in my head, I dreamed of this day. It was going to be this amazing day. It was like some kind of symphony was going to be playing, and, you know, thunder would come and lightning would come from the heavens. But it was a phone call, and I said thank you, and I hung up the phone. And I remember thinking, "Wow, that's all it is? Just like that, a phone call?" And you're like, "Oh, thanks. Okay, great. Bye." You know, and I'm like, "Wow, I've just spent 5 years working towards this moment where the phone rings, and I got to tell you, it doesn't feel like much." I mean, I was happy and I was pleased, but I don't think it was. I just remember thinking, this can't be worth the effort. And that was the sort of thing. It's like I was really worshiping that kind of success. And of course, because it wasn't God, it wasn't real, and it, or at least it wasn't real to me, and it wasn't healthy for me. And that was the beginning of, and I didn't get sober for 5 or 6 years after that, but that was one of the early milestones of my realizing that something wasn't healthy in my life. Exodus 21:5 says, "But if a bondsman," meaning a Jewish bondsman, "shall say, 'I love my master, my wife, and my children, I shall not go free,' then his master shall bring him to the court, and shall bring him to the door or to the doorpost, and his master shall bore through his ear with an awl, and he shall serve him forever." Now, we're getting into a potentially sensitive area of the Bible, which is dealing with indentured servants, Jewish bondsmen. And the background to this is that in those days, and in the tradition of the Bible, if someone was in debt and couldn't pay back their debts, then another person could pay off their debts, and in return, that the person who got bailed out would work for that person for 6 years, and in the seventh year they'd go free. And this was an arrangement that worked at the time, and in fact it was used even in the United States. In the 17th and 18th centuries, people would come and work. People would pay for servants to come for 6 years, and then they'd be free. But we're talking in this case about a situation where after 6 years, the servant says, "You know, I like this so much, I don't want to leave. I want to be a servant forever." So the ritual that's prescribed is that the master should take an awl, which is like a tool used for punching holes in leather, and put a hole through his ear. So it seems this. I realize this seems strange, but it is. It reveals a number of things that are useful to us in recovery. One is that the Bible specifically states that a Jewish bondsman and a Jewish master should have a different relationship from other master-servant relationships, and that the Jewish master needs to take very good care of his Jewish bondsman and provide him with ample food and a nice place to live and everything. It should be a comfortable experience, and when the term of servitude is over, he should provide him with money and food and every, you know, should send him on his way in a positive way. But this is what's interesting, is that, so I guess this was an issue that some servants were like, "Well, this isn't so bad. I think I'll just stay here forever." And this, to me, is a lot like being an addict. You know, you never had it so good, right? You just don't realize what's going on in your life. I mean, being a servant to another human being, even in this dignified way, is a degrading experience. And you can only want that in a permanent way if you're a spiritually degraded person or degraded by addiction. And I think that I've certainly seen this in addicts I've worked with over the years. You know, like, they're just so, like, "Hey, my life is fine. I'm doing great. Don't bother about me. I got it good, you know? Everything's fine." But, of course, you don't, like, you know, I mean, one guy I ran into in the rooms in Los Angeles, you know, he was living in a cardboard box. And he's like, "But it's a good box. It's fine. It fits me fine. It's all I need." Okay. If that's what you think your life is going to be, then I guess you really aren't seeing what's going on. You know, do you want to be living in a box, really? But you see, that's the state of mind you can get into. And you forget that there's really a true master to serve in your life, and that is God. That is, serving a human master is not the objective. And, you know, this idea of wanting to be servant forever, and it's obviously, nothing in the Bible is accidental. This boring of the ear is not a coincidence. It's the ear that heard the Ten Commandments. What God is saying is, this ear that heard the Ten Commandments after you were freed from being a real slave in Egypt, you're going to be a slave forever. We're going to put a hole in that ear to remind you that you didn't use your ears correctly. So there's lots of symbolism in this. Now, coming up into this section of the Bible, we have what you might call tort laws, rules for a civil society. And in Exodus 21:24, it describes damages by saying, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a hand for a hand, a foot for a foot. And this is, unfortunately, one of the most famous sayings in the entire Bible, and it's also one of the most misunderstood and misinterpreted phrases in the Bible. It's really important to understand what it actually means. Many people will take this to mean, if you knock out my eye, I will knock out your eye. I will get retribution to you in proportion. If you hurt me, I'll hurt you. But this is exactly not what it means. What it means is that there should be equity in settlements of damages. So if I cause you $20 worth of damage, you have to pay me $20. And in some cases, maybe you have to pay like some kind of penalty on top of that. But it is really about balance. And it's about setting up a civil society. And unfortunately, you know, addictive behavior has in it many, you know, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth stories in the wrong sense. Or worse, you know, someone knocks out your tooth and you kill them, you know. I mean, it's just overreaction, revenge, simmering resentments. And sobriety involves two aspects of this idea. One is that you have to be prepared to pay for the damage you did, and it has to be in proportion. So if you took $20 from someone, pay back $20. And one of the suggestions is to just do it and don't really feel so good about yourself in the process. I mean, it's a good sign of healthy recovery to make amends, but you know, you're supposed to do it. You know, like if you owe someone $20 and you pay them back, you're not a big hero. You're just doing what you're supposed to do. Exodus 21:33 says, if a man shall uncover a pit, or if a man shall dig a pit and not cover it, and an ox or a donkey fell into it, the owner of the pit shall make restitution. So this is probably should seem like a very familiar concept of law that we deal with every day in modern society. Tort law. You know, if you create a hazard and it hurts somebody, you got to pay for it. And it's basic, but you see, I think, again, like everything else in recovery and addiction, the most basic things don't seem normal. You know, and also one thing you have to realize about an idea like this is it's literally about a hole, and it's also about figurative holes, about symbolic holes. You know, we have an expression, right? So digging yourself into a hole, right? It doesn't mean actually digging a hole and getting into it. It means getting into a problem you can't solve, and or causing a problem for someone else that they can't solve. And recovery is about taking responsibility for what you've done. So, you know, sometimes in our addictive behavior, we do things that are wrong, or we trick other people, or we take advantage of situations, or we, you know, set up holes for people, you know, maybe negligently doing things that end up hurting people or causing them financial damage. That's the same thing about digging a pit that you don't fill in and being prepared to pay for it. And it also means not blaming other people for what you've done. And I can recall an unbelievable incident that brings this to mind, which is that there was a man who had a very serious drinking problem, and he ended up killing somebody in his car. And his response to this incident was to say, well, it was that guy's fault. He was crossing in the middle of the street. Meaning that, you know, I'm not responsible. I was just driving my car. This guy decided to walk in the middle of the street. So the fact that I ran him over, that's his fault. And I think anybody with any kind of common sense or sobriety would say, well, that may partly explain the situation, but you were drunk, and if you hadn't been drunk, that guy would probably still be alive, regardless of where he was in the street. That, you know, but the inability to see that he had done something wrong, it was sort of like he dug a hole and someone fell into it, and he's like, okay, I'm not paying for that. So this verse in the Bible is there to remind us that we need to take responsibility. Similarly, in Exodus 22:13 says, if a man shall borrow from his fellow, and it shall become broken, or the borrowed animal shall die, provided the owner is not with him, he shall surely make restitution. So again, this is a pretty basic idea. You borrow someone's ox or tools or whatever, and if you break them or the ox dies, you have to pay for it. And in, you know, modern polite society, you at least have to offer to pay for it. That's usually what counts in these kind of situations. For us addicts, though, the concept of taking responsibility can be hard to grasp. And I think we've all done this, you know, when we're using and drinking. You borrow something from a friend and not return it. And sometimes you don't even know, like, this is what's... you may not even remember what you borrowed. I mean, I know someone who had this experience of borrowing a car during blackout drinking and could not remember where the car was. You know, it's like, I'm really sorry I borrowed your car. I was in a blackout and the car is around somewhere and it took weeks to find it. You know, or breaking things in that you've borrowed. And this also applies to people's time, I think. A lot of the time we borrow, and when we're using, we borrow people's time and don't return it or borrow and break it. You know, and I think it's important to have an idea of making amends for borrowing and breaking a friend's time. It's a way to extend this concept, this biblical verse. Exodus 22:20 says, you shall not taunt or oppress a stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. So this is a profound idea that the Israelites need to be kind to strangers, to be hospitable and charitable with them, because, first of all, because it's the right thing to do, but also because the Israelite should never forget that he or she was also a stranger in a strange land, a stranger in Egypt. Never forget that experience. So, in fact, Moses has a son named Gershom, and Gershom in Hebrew means ger, stranger, Sha'am, in a strange land. He literally names his son a stranger in a strange land to remind himself that he is a stranger in a strange land, and we should never forget that. And in the program, this can be enacted by being kind to newcomers. Newcomers are fragile, and we need to be generous to them. You know, and again, it should be pretty obvious, but sometimes people who are not working good program can be difficult or rough on newcomers or ignore them, none of which is good. And you know, this verse should encourage us to remember that we were once strangers. We were once walking into a room full of strangers, ready to or wanting to get ready to be sober, and we should remember how most likely that was a very difficult thing to do and took a lot of guts and was a very shaky time. And we should reflect on people who were kind to us during those days and hopefully emulate their behavior. Exodus 24:7 says, everything that God has said we will do and we will obey. So this is saying, this is the Israelites' response to the Ten Commandments and these laws that were presented afterwards in the Bible. So the Israelites are given the Ten Commandments and they respond, we will do and we will obey. Okay? So you might think, well, of course, you know, God himself appeared and said, here's these laws. You know, you'd think you'd say yes, right? Most of us would say yes. I don't know. With my luck, I probably wouldn't be paying attention. Anyway, it says, but you're an addict. That even these most basic sort of common sense ideas or common sense advice can seem alien and unfair. You know, it's like, you want me to stop drinking and stop lying and stealing? Wait, you got to be kidding me, right? So it seems really basic when you're sober, but when you're using it, it seems like weird, nonsensical advice. And getting sober has a lot to do with making yourself willing to take direction from people who know what they're talking about. Sort of suspending your own head a little bit. And, you know, and what's interesting too is that this phrase can be interpreted to mean that the Israelites are saying, we're gonna follow the laws that haven't been specified yet, because we're in Exodus here. There's a lot of more laws to come in the Bible, and the Jews are saying, we're going to follow those too. We will follow them. We don't know what they are, but we're going to follow them. And that, I think, is a good poise for, or especially early recovery. Like, okay, I'm going to get direction, and I'm just going to take it on faith that it's the right thing to do. And that's a one way to ensure that you're in the right state of mind to stay sober.
You've been listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible. www.foriwillbewithyou.com